This is FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. This is going to be a very interesting show. We have Dr. Ralph Fullerton on, and he is an expert in geography and history. He's over here laughing already. I love the modest people who come in here because they have so much knowledge. And this is one area that I have been absolutely fascinated with, and Dr. Fullerton and I were, and I'm going to call you Ralph. Is that all right?
Please do.
Because we're close to the same age.
That's right.
We were talking earlier about some of the things that you have done, and I have just been sitting back just absolutely enjoying every bit of it. And Dr. Fullerton, all right, Ralph, I'm going to say that anymore. All right. You have traveled extensively in the Latin American areas.
Yes, sir.
And that's what you're... tell me, first of all, how you developed in your education process to get to the point where you were actually going into that area, because you're really an interesting individual.
Well, thank you for all the compliments. And sometimes it's a little simplistic. For example, when we got to doctoral study at Indiana, you had to pick a region mm-hmm. to specialize in. And I thought, oh, there's hundreds of people, if not thousands, running around that are experts in Europe and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And I said, I'm going to pick a region that's a little different and a little interesting to me, having been to Latin America when I was in the service. And so that's the road I started down.
Now, you were in the Air Force, right?
Yes, sir.
And you went through flight school.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And
as I say, I wouldn't take a million for doing it, but I wouldn't do it for a million again.
I don't know. I think that would be one of the more interesting things. Some of my best friends are people who have flown in different situations, and you know, not everybody has that aptitude or that physical ability to actually get up in the air, because I know that I'm one of these people. I can jump out of airplanes. I did that in the service.
Oh.
But actually navigating an airplane, I'm not too sure about that.
Well, you're one of those folks that I remember flying some paratroopers out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
I was there.
Okay.
Yeah, 18th Airborne.
Okay.
Corps.
And the old sergeant said, I've taken off hundreds of times in these things, but I've never landed in one of them. Jumped out every time.
Yeah. And it's such a soft landing when you come down with that big T-10 parachute.
Well, my philosophy, Truman, if I may call you that.
Yes, sir.
Is a little bit along the lines of a fellow there at flight school, that when we had to do some parachute training, which mm-hmm. is just the towers or whatever.
Mm-hmm. 250-foot towers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He said... he didn't believe in practicing anything. It had to be right the first time.
And it better be.
And it better be, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So your interest was in the South America area down there in Latin America.
Yes, sir.
And I can understand that, because it's one of those areas that's fascinating, because there's so many different things going on down there. But you went down in a time that was totally different than the way things are right now.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I would have considered some retirement in that part of the world, but the wife was not in favor of that.
A lot of interest in people in Argentina.
Well, we kind of joked about that, and she said, well, you could live on the south side of the Rio Grande. I could live on the north side. But the people are warm, friendly. I feel sorry for them now with the problems they have. And they literally enjoy life. They have a saying down there that translates out, I have so much to do, I think I'll lie down. Mm-hmm. And I believe we're one of the few countries in the world that invents the five-minute break, take out food, paper plates, mm-hmm. you know, things of that nature. It's really a contrast in the two worlds.
Actually, I liked it better the way it used to be when we're talking about 40 or 50 years ago. It was a different world even here. I mean, we talk about it changing so much in Mexico, South America, and things like that. But we've had a lot of changes here, too, that are not always for the best.
No, sir. You know, cancer is a growth.
Yeah.
So you talk about growth, you know, mm-hmm. are you talking about... a good growth or a bad growth, and of course
that's an interesting concept.
Oh yes.
So when you first got your first taste of going into Latin America, you were actually you're in graduate study at that time.
No, well, my first taste was when we crossed the border in the Air Force.
Uh-huh.
And went down, but I'm not sure how to answer your question in that, because I was fortunate enough to make many, many trips down
okay.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just grew on me to, I was befriended by people and everything. Mm-hmm. And
you obviously had a love for it.
And
I presume at that time, the people in North America, the USA, they still had a great admiration for the people who lived here at the time.
Yeah, and you know the sad thing with the drug problem, whatever, and I don't want to get in too deeply into the immigration mm-hmm. thing, but there's a popular song down there which I think people ought to be legal when they come to the United States, but it also causes me to think. And that song says, translates, it's only a river, it's not that deep or wide.
Mm-hmm.
A boy can throw a stone across and reach the other side. It's only muddy water flowing through the land, but a man can make a dream come true just across the Rio Grande.
Wow.
Now, you listen to the poignancy of that. You see.
We're there, what do you call it, the El Dorado?
Yeah, we're there, El Dorado. Yeah.
And you think about it, and they want to come over, they want to work, but the other side of the coin is there are a lot of people that are here now legally, the way it was set up,
mm-hmm.
that are actually part of the American dream, and they've earned it by coming through and doing all the things
yeah.
that they have to do. And I guess they're predominant, they come from all over the world, and they're able to interface with all the citizens here, and they're so proud. I mean, I see them taking the oath of citizenship,
mm-hmm.
and you see the tears flowing down their eyes. And we're in a world right now, and you and I were talking about it earlier, where responsibility doesn't seem to be a key thought in people's minds anymore. They just want to grab they want the brass ring in their hand without having to work for it.
Well, you know, again, much of what I'm saying is personal opinion, but it's not the responsibility, it's the avoidance of it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it's a complicated thing, because we are a nation of immigrants,
mm-hmm.
but probably 99% of the immigrants that they being some nebulous group, talk about,
mm-hmm.
all came through Ellis Island.
Right.
They didn't swim across the river, you see. So, and yet someone that, you know, has a dream, what do you do to pursue that dream? No.
But then again, let's look at it in a government sense. If you have a lot of people coming over here and they're not assuming a lot of the responsibilities and not aware of a lot of the laws of the land, it causes a problem by having that large group come in, because a lot of them are not aware of it. Their big thing is they want to come in here and they want to make a go for themselves. And somehow a lot of their allegiance or their loyalties may be back in another area, in another country.
Well, you know, there's so many facets to all this, and some of my students used to say, I've got a hard question for you, and my comment would be, questions aren't hard, it's the answers
right.
that give you the trouble. And one of the things we toyed about in graduate school one time and came up with no answers was, how many people can the world support?
Right.
Well, how many people can the country support, you see? And when I was a child, I think the population of the United States was somewhere around 130, 32 million. Mm-hmm. Now it's probably around 300 million,
right.
you say. And you can see that when you go out on the road, mm-hmm. you know.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, you know.
But when you were down there in, what, the early 70s?
That's when I started, yes.
It had to be a lot different than the way things are now, because I don't remember the large outflow from Mexico into the United States when you and I were younger.
No.
It seemed like that they were happier or more satisfied mm-hmm. to be where they were. Mm-hmm. And it's just in the last, really the last 20 years that we've seen a lot of this going on. And you were relating to me how Mexico was when you went through there, and some of the other countries, Ecuador, people were a lot different than what we expect them to be now during that particular time.
Well, once again, getting back to personal opinion, you know, we've created a lot of desire in the minds of those people through media and television.
Right.
And in effect have gone down and said, you folks don't know how miserable you are. You don't have a mansion, you don't have 20 acres, this type of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to some of those folks, and they're just as happy as they can be. And I was staying with one family, and they had a braided wire coming in the window, and it was stapled up and over across the ceiling and down over my bed.
Mm-hmm.
And you walked up and flicked the switch, and you had your light in your bedroom. And I commented one day about that in a tactful way, and the man of the house said, very simply, he says, it works. You know?
Yeah, we're spoiled. We want the best of everything.
Oh, yeah.
Got a great television, but they just advertised one on your television that you can buy one twice as large for less money and do a whole lot more.
I hope no one takes offense, but I think it was Bob Hope that once said, America's that wonderful country where people spend money they don't have on things they don't need to impress people they don't know. And there's an element of truth in that, you know.
Well, if you can think back of some of what Bob Hope used to say, they were so funny, and I know they weren't meant in a derogatory way.
No.
If you ever saw the movie Ghostbusters, or Ghostbreakers it was, Bob Hope was in it with Paulette Goddard, and Richard Carlson was trying to explain to him what a zombie was. And he would say, it's someone who would walk around with no thoughts of his own, just pretty much lifeless. And Bob Hope said, oh, you mean a Democrat? but those things were funny back then. Now we're almost going to take offense at it. I mean, we're more politically correct, and sometimes that breeds another thought that maybe not as kind, or maybe we lose our sense of having fun with things that really aren't meant to hurt anybody.
Well, the sad thing is, anything can be offensive
yeah.
to anybody at any time.
Yeah.
You know, and it may depend on how I felt when I got up this morning
mm-hmm.
as to whether or not I'm easily offended. Yeah.
Now, when you were in those areas, they're not like border towns like we see them now. In fact, sometimes we can draw our opinion just on a small group of people rather than the entire group. But as you know, as the drugs have become more rampant in the lower countries down there, and as they're brought across into our countries, the danger level and the way that we view people coming from over there has become such a negative part of our thinking. And it's not true. When you go down to those countries, you still have a large group of really nice people down in there. That actually, and you were telling me, which was quite contradictory of what my thoughts are, that they're safe places to go, and they welcome you in with open arms. Yeah. And you've worked with the government leaders down there.
You know, the drug problem is the big one, obviously.
Right.
And sad to say is that they produce drugs because people want to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can make $7,000 a week growing marijuana as opposed to growing corn, and even if you put it in this country, you know, that, what kind of choice would you make?
We're the big problem. We're in a drug-driven society here in the United States.
Yes.
And to be perfectly honest with you, I never thought I would see it. I started seeing it in the mid-70s here when we were working in law enforcement. But there was very little of it around here. I mean, it was just a small problem at that time. And it just grown completely out of proportion right now. And, you know, but look what it's caused. Look what the result is. All of the kingpins, the big money people down in Mexico and places like that, are the drug traffickers.
Yes.
And look at the violence that's related to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Did you ever think that you would see anything like that?
No, sir.
There?
No. The deeper you go into the country, the better or safer it becomes, per se. But once again, the drug cartels are starting to invade even the interior of the country now.
Yes.
But coming back to my interest in that area, it has a tremendous geographical significance. And if I may relate to you, one of the things that we did that was most interesting, there's a river called the Usumacinta.
Mm-hmm.
It's the boundary between Guatemala and Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And those of us that been in that area frequently, that's referred to as Maya Alley. There's so many things that Mayans did in that region. And back about 20 years ago or so, the Mexican government was planning on building a series of dams because the river flows through some canyons.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have flooded an area that was quite valuable archaeologically and all, and they didn't really know what was there, but the simple thing was build a dam.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did, a project out of MTSU, was to take and map this area by satellite.
Mm-hmm.
And without going into all the boring technicalities of it, we presented a map to the Mexican government and says, now you can take a helicopter out to this spot, and it may be a rock.
Mm-hmm.
Or it may be the top of a pyramid.
Oh.
And you didn't have to hack your way through the jungle to do that. And fortunately, they did not build the dams. They're still exploring in that area now.
That's interesting.
I feel good about that. Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Ralph Fullerton.
Are you driving around in a state of doubt, wondering how your car insurance will really take care of you? I'm State Farm Agent Monty King. Let me get you to a better state, a state of confidence that the coverage you're driving around with is actually driven by your wants and your needs. That's why 97% of the people who've had claims with State Farm would recommend us, without a doubt. Give me a call at 220-2210. You'll see how easy and affordable it can be.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
I'm State Farm Agent Monty King in Smyrna. Give me a call at 220-2210.
Weather Eye. Cloudy skies will continue in our forecast this afternoon with a high temperature near 40 degrees, and we'll see clearing skies tonight with lows dropping back to 25. I'm WGNS meteorologist Sam Lanisky. Right now, it's 28.
We're at the Garden Patch Thrift Store on Spring Street across from the tall NHC building with Christy Sanford here joining us. And Christy, you have more than just clothing here at the thrift store. You've got lots of furniture.
Couches, recliners, chairs, office desk, and definitely appliances.
The warehouse store at the Garden Patch is open Wednesdays and Thursdays.
It changes so often, we have a lot of turnover back there.
The Garden Patch Thrift Store warehouse is open Wednesdays and Thursdays. They're on Spring Street.
Southern Community Bank, unlike all the rest. Beverly Barker, branch manager.
Southern Community Bank is a strong, independent community partner with a simple philosophy. Keep banking hassle-free for people who just want to be treated well.
We're unlike all the rest. Our services are intuitive. Our team is friendly. Our approach is refreshing. And our service is clearly unique.
We're located at 1950 Old Fort Parkway, next to the Doubletree Hotel.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Tennessee Radio Network News, I'm Kristen Thoburn. Tennessee senators voted on the last-minute measure last night to avoid the so-called fiscal cliff. Republican Senator Bob Corker says he supports the bill based on substance, but is disappointed with what he says were pep rallies President Obama was having during a critical time of negotiations. The measure passed with 89 votes. Both Corker and Senator Lamar Alexander voted for the compromise. Doctors who treat 10 care patients are getting a New Year's pay raise. Practitioners in family medicine, general internal medicine, pediatrics, or a related subspecialty will start to be reimbursed at Medicare rates. On average, that's about 25% above what they're paid now. 10 care officials say that boost will give qualifying Tennessee doctors an extra $55 million over the next 2 years. The city of Mount Juliet is no longer using red light cameras starting on Monday.
The city commission voted not to renew its contract with American Traffic Solutions more than a year ago, even though the system generated about $70,000 a year for the city. The cameras are located at 5 intersections but will stop operating January 7th.
TRN's Dan Idem. Labor Department officials say a Memphis-based tent and awning company has paid more than $133,000 in back wages and benefits for 28 Louisiana workers. The department says an investigation by its wage and hour division showed the Mahaffney Tent and Awning Company failed to pay Fort Polk, Louisiana employees proper prevailing wages and fringe benefits.
If you've heard anything about Bosch dishwashers, you've most likely heard how quiet they are. In fact, Bosch offers the quietest dishwashers in America. It's because Bosch is committed to producing the world's best appliances, including dishwashers that meet the exacting Bosch standards of German-engineered quality and European design. In fact, a total of 485 quality control tests are performed on every Bosch dishwasher before they leave the factory. But despite our dishwasher's quietness, our customers have been making a lot of noise recently about us. Bosch dishwashers were just ranked highest in customer satisfaction with dishwashers by J.D. Power & Associates. You can't rank any higher than that.
Visit your local Bosch dealer for special promotions. Bosch offers the quietest dishwashers in the U.S. based on available sound information on competitors' websites, December 2012. For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com.
An effort to reduce opposition to supermarket wine sales is so far failing to change the minds of liquor store owners who stand to lose the most out of the proposal. Under the bill that's taking shape before the legislature convenes next week, local referendums would determine if wine could be sold alongside beer in grocery and convenience stores around the state. In exchange, liquor stores could branch out to sell items like beer, mixers, ice, and snacks. I'm Kristen Thoburn, Tennessee Radio Network News.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, AmeriCare Pest Control, and the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS.
I've got pets.
AmeriCare Services Incorporated, family-owned and operated for residential and commercial customers, we offer a full range of services. Our services include one-time, monthly, and quarterly pest control, termite control, moisture and fungus control, automatic foundation vents, and more. Licensed, insured, and bonded for your protection. 893-7111.
Call the best of the best.
to get rid of your pet.
AmeriCare Services Incorporated.
WGNS, Murfreesboro.
Let's check those Good Neighbor events. Don't trash your Christmas tree and put it in the landfill. Recycle it. Take those living Christmas trees to Cannonsburg Pioneer Village. You can do that any time of the day or night, now through January the 11th. Or if it's closer for you to take it to the City Public Works facility over on Florence Road, the place where you get the mulch, you can do that weekdays from 6 in the morning until 3:55 in the afternoon. And the Murfreesboro Parks and Recreation Department is offering a 25% discount all this month on passes to SportsCom and the Patterson Community Center. This includes the exercise areas, the pools, and everything. 25% off all passes that you purchase this month from the Murfreesboro Parks and Recreation Department. And speaking of Parks and Rec, the Polar Bear Plunge is this Saturday. Oh boy! In the outside pool at SportsCom. The Arctic Adventure in the gym starts at 8:30, and the plunge is at 10 o'clock in the outdoor pool. Be sure to bring a can of non-perishable food for the Murfreesboro School Food Bank. That's this Saturday morning. Those are Good Neighbor events.
You had an accident and the guy's bloodthirsty lawyer wants to sue you. How would you protect yourself? Affordable liability insurance from Safe Auto. For not a lot of money, you can protect yourself from your own mistakes. Call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO now. Drive safe, spend less, Safe Auto.
Since 1940, your first choice for air conditioning and heating repairs has been Roscoe Brown. Now when you have plumbing problems, it's also Roscoe Brown. You can depend on Roscoe Brown for any type of plumbing service and innovative plumbing solutions. Roscoe Brown is fully licensed, bonded, and insured, and fully qualified to assist with heating, air conditioning, and now plumbing. Roscoe Brown. Phone 888-MY-ROSCOE.
He knows Rutherford County, and he knows the people of Rutherford County. Truman Jones, here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Dr. Ralph Fullerton. And I think people need to be here sometimes when we're off the air, because the conversations are so interesting, aren't they, Ralph?
They are very much so, yes.
We go all over the place. But when you go down in the South American area, and at that time, you had a lot of people that you worked with in government, as you mentioned earlier, and during that particular time, it had to... Did you kind of relate it some way to the way that we deal here when we're talking about in the 70s, in the 80s, how you were able to interact? Because these people would become your new families there for a long time. And I was just wondering, did you ever feel uncomfortable when you would go down there? Or was it an automatic rapport that you gained with each one of them?
I never personally felt uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. In fact... One night, we were on the subway in Mexico City, my wife and I, and the subway was having troubles. It would mm-hmm. stop, start, stop. And, of course, it's hot and everything. And I said, I think it's best that next stop we get off, because mm-hmm. I don't know whether this is going to make it or not. And so we got off, came up from the below ground, in the middle of nowhere, to me, Mexico City. And I had no qualms whatsoever. And I went over to this couple walking, and I said, could you please direct me to what's called the Zocalo, which is kind of like the courthouse square. Mm-hmm. And they gave me directions, and the wife and I walked back. Here it was about 9, 10 o'clock at night. And I would be reluctant to do that in many of our cities.
Right.
You know, now there again, that was 20, 25 years ago, you know, but I never felt uncomfortable personally. Now, I can't remember, time gets away, but after a project in Costa Rica, mm-hmm. I said to the wife, let's go to Panama while we're here. We've mm-hmm. been through the canal, but I'd like to drive along the canal. And it was right after Noriega had been taken out. Mm-hmm. So when we finally got to the hotel, they had an armed guard and all this, and my wife did make the statement. She says, next time we go somewhere, I don't want it to be a third world country. So that cost me a trip to Hawaii.
What time period were we talking about at that time?
That would have probably been early 90s. I can't remember when Noriega went out,
right,
personally.
But in the 70s and the 80s, you never felt that way.
No.
And we look at the governments down there in South America and especially in Mexico as being powerless to stop a lot of things, and we look at it as being corrupt. I mean, I don't know other way to put it, because that is the that is what we receive, the information that we receive on television and other things like that. Are things really that bad down in Mexico? Because we're told, do not drive in Mexico. If you cross the border, don't drive in there because you're subject to be hijacked or murdered or whatever like that.
Well, today I wouldn't drive.
Right.
But a few years ago, 20 years ago, maybe 15, wife and I'd be on a public bus between A and B and that kind of thing. No fears whatsoever. And it's amazing how much alike people tend to be. For example, the jokes we make about our government, mm-hmm, and Congress and so forth. And one of my friends down there, we were out riding one day and we went by a beautiful building. And I said, what is that building? And he says, we call that the estufa. Mm-hmm. And which is Spanish for oven. And I said, oven? What? And it was the headquarters of the Revolutionary Party.
Wow.
And he says, the reason we call it that is we never know what they're cooking in there. And just the general jokes, they tell the one, and I don't know how much your audience is interested in this, but the one of the revolutionary leaders goes out on the balcony to the crowd cheering and says, comes a revolution, everything will be peaches and cream. Now it loses something in its translation, but a voice in the crowd says, I don't like peaches and cream. And the revolutionary leader says, comes a revolution, you will like peaches and cream. So you see some of that permeating our own society,
mm-hmm.
Well,
I do know, I have some friends that they go on mission trips in Mexico.
Yes.
And when they get there, they always try to plan ahead that there's going to be some law enforcement officers that are going to be asking for money for them to do things, mm-hmm, whether it to get from one point to another.
Yeah.
And it seems to permeate almost everywhere in our thoughts. Is that a true assumption of the entire area? Because you were telling me that as you get south into the bigger cities and the bigger towns, you don't seem to have that type of situation.
I never encountered that. They have a term down there called mordida, mm-hmm, which comes from the verb to bite. So they put the bite on you, so mm-hmm to speak. I think right here in this country, if a police officer was hitting around for something, I'd get that message, the same as I would get the message in Latin America. Mm-hmm. But I never encountered it,
Of course, if a police officer does something here, then he's accountable for it, and then he's going to be prosecuted for it.
Right. Yeah.
But down there, it seems like a whole different type of subculture going on.
Well, one time I took a group of students, and we were traveling by a public bus.
Mm-hmm.
And about 20 miles into the country, we left Laredo, mm-hmm, which right now is a hotbed of drugs. But we left Laredo, and about 20 miles into the country, they pulled into this plaza area, which was a checkpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to examine everything. And we were on a bus with ordinary Mexicans, and I thought, now if they're going to take all these suitcases off and go through them, we could be here for hours. And I said to this little fellow in my best Spanish, is there any way we can expedite this? And he said, no, not. And we talked a little bit, and finally he disappears, and he goes into the building, and out comes this big fellow wearing pistol and badge and everything. And we discussed the situation, and I said, we've already been through customs once. Can we expedite this? And he said, rectificación. And I said, yes. And he held his fingers up and rubbed them. He says, money. And I pulled my wallet out, because at that time I knew we had set the stage. And all I had was a $10 bill, smallest I had. And I turned to one of my students and said, do you have anything smaller? He walked over and pulled that $10 bill out of my wallet, and he said, sufficient. And he starts towards the building, and they start putting the suitcases back on the bus. And the little fellow that was the peon there, I said, why are you crying? And he said, he always keeps all the money. And so we took up a collection to give to the little guy. Yeah. Now, to me, that was interesting in the culture. Illegal, yes, harassment to some extent, but it was part of their way of doing things, you know.
They grow up in that, so yes. They don't really see, it's just part of their working culture. They don't see anything wrong with it.
You know, I've often said, we don't take bribes in this country at high levels. We just have cost overruns.
That's a good way of looking at it.
You know.
But you know, a friend of mine, we were in San Diego to pick, had to go pick up a prisoner. So we decided we'd go down in Tijuana. I always heard about it. So we just, yeah.
Sin City.
Yeah. So we took a cab in there, which is only a quarter of a mile or whatever from the border. And we bought some silver and some leather goods, which were very cheap down there, and brought them back. And you were talking about, as you come back into the United States at the border, the people we went through, I guess it would be the USA, because everybody there were American citizens working there at the gate. And I noticed that they would have different places to go through. And the one that John Brown and I, he was with me, we went through, they didn't check anything because they saw that we were American citizens. They didn't check at all. I mean, we had a big bag coming through there. But we noticed there's big lines in some of the others, and they were checking everything that went through. But on the other hand, we went down to Tucson, Arizona, to pick up 500 pounds of marijuana because we were running reverses here in Rutherford County and catching the big guys that were selling them. So we went down to a place, I'm trying to think of what the Mantis, M-A-N-T-I-S, which is a U.S. government run place, and they had a big warehouse down there where they store all of that stuff. So we packed this van full of 500 pounds of marijuana and we're heading back. And we went through El Paso at a border check, and the guard came over, looked in and said, hey guys, how y'all doing? And I said, we're doing fine, we're from Tennessee. We had guns sitting on the floorboard, of course, because we didn't want to get hijacked. And the guy looked in, we didn't show IDs or anything. You could smell it. I was already getting sick smelling it. And he says, you guys go on. Didn't do anything at all. And then we got up in the northern part of Texas and we got stopped, and it took us 3 hours. We had all the government papers and everything, but it still took forever to be finally released to come back to Tennessee. And I thought, boy, isn't that interesting? It was so easy to bring that stuff through. The guy didn't check it all. And we had it was a rental van and had Tennessee tags. And that right there if you're going to look at a vehicle that probably is bringing something illegal in, that would be one of the first things that you would check.
You might be interested, as some of the audience, National Geographic Channel has a series that they do very frequently called On the Border. And it is amazing what these drug enforcement people are taught to look for.
Oh, I know.
Just the questions they ask, and the fact you get nervous and that kind of thing, you know. And it's a very interesting program. I'd recommend it to anyone. You know.
Well, one thing about it, the officers in Texas were doing their job because they saw something that they thought was suspicious.
Yeah.
And that's the reason they did it. Now, when you were down in Ecuador and in Latin America, and you were actually doing your geographic studies and things like that, you were working directly with the governments down there. And did was a lot of that going on where you'd bring experts from the United States into those countries that probably did not have the resources to take care of that? Did they work directly with your school or the government, or how were you able to accomplish that?
Well, one of the projects, we got a grant from NASA to do the mapping in the Usumacinta Valley. And in fact, I should have thought to have brought this, but National Geographic published our map in an article on Maya Alley there. And Mike Curtis, who works over in GIS for the county, or county.
Yeah.
Mike was one of our students at the time. Oh. And he spent many hours analyzing the satellite imagery for us. And I gave, if you're ever over there, I gave Mike the original map that was done, because he'd done a lot of work and he had direct interest in it. And of course, when I'm dead and gone, no one's going to care about the Usumacinta Valley. But we worked and gave that over to the government of Mexico. We had to work with Corps of Engineers, forestry, you name it. National Geographic was involved. In fact, a fellow named Stewart, who was with National Geographic, he is largely responsible for having broken the Mayan language code. And most interesting person in it, down there 2-3 years at a stretch. When we went, then we were asked to set up a program using this technology in Costa Rica at the National University. And they put the satellite mapping program in their School of Wildlife Management. Whereas here it was in our geography department. Then a couple years after that, we were approached by what's called, I'll think about it, well, it was a school operated by the Army in Ecuador for the Indian population, people who could not afford to go to college. And the program they wanted established there, and we went down and set a program up for them, in, which is now on. So we did work primarily in Mexico, Costa Rica, and Ecuador. And when you are working with the government, and they're your sponsor and host, my wife also said, well, now I know how these big wheels can travel so much, because we didn't lift a finger. We landed, they met us, they gave the wives flowers, escorted us into a room with hors d'oeuvres and all.
VIPs.
Yes, sir. And they came in a few minutes later and said, your passports have been checked, the bus is loaded, we'll now take you to the hotel. So it's quite an interesting time in our life.
Yeah. I wished I could go back with you, because I guarantee you it's really is fascinating. And I know it's fascinating to everybody out there listening. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Ralph Fuller.
talking with Dr. Rishi Saxena, board-certified cardiologist, the first to acquire the 64-slice CT scan, and still the only one in the area that can decipher the information.
I'm the most trained guy. I'm board-certified in heart CT. Nobody else is in this area.
Before heart catheterization or stress test, call 896-4800. This CT scan only takes minutes, no needles, and it could show early signs other tests miss.
We are the only one who are trained to find plaque buildup earlier.
We select our insurance companies the same way you do, very carefully. When you work with us, you can count on receiving fast, courteous, and professional service and quality protection through auto owner's insurance. For a no-problem approach to your life, home, car, and business insurance needs, ask us about the no-problem company, Auto Owners. This is Doran Claiborne with Claiborne & Taylor Insurance. Give us a call at 893-5064.
Everyone loves Stones River Manor.
Everybody that works here is so good to us. The place is so beautiful, and they keep it that way. They're always working to improve it.
Stones River Manor, behind Rite Aid, at the intersection of Haines and Memorial. Stop by Stones River Manor for a tour. Ask for Mike Gann. Stones River Manor, it's home.
Hi, this is Peter Demas, and I'm inviting you to come eat with our family at Demas's Restaurant. There's a large segment of the population that is allergic to gluten, and we recognize this, and so we created a gluten-free menu so that they can have that. We also have other ones, too. If someone is allergic to garlic or they're vegetarian, we have those as well. And then we also created a one-page menu. One side is for all our low-carb options, and one side's all our low-calorie options. Come to our Demas's Restaurant in Murfreesboro, which is located on 1115 Northwest Broad Street.
This is Frieda Morgan with First National Bank of Murfreesboro. If you're looking for a change in your bank and want a great traditional bank with personalized service, please come and see us today at First National Bank of Murfreesboro. We're located at 2230 Mercury Boulevard. You can reach us by phone at 615-494-4200. Again, personalized, convenient, and traditional banking services at First National Bank of Murfreesboro. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Rich Schmidt with more winter savings at Haines Tree Value Hardware. Now that the temperature has dropped, it's more important than ever to keep your bird feeders full. Right now, Haines Tree Value Hardware has big value-packed bags of bird food for only $5.99 while supplies last. Pick up a 10-pound bag of nutritious black oil sunflower bird seed or choose a 20-pound bag of True Value Wild bird food, chock full of vitamins and minerals. Take advantage of these great bargains of the month today at Haines Tree Value Hardware. Start right, start here. Haines True Value Hardware on Memorial behind Reeves Sane Drugstore.
Weatherize.
Cloudy skies will continue in our forecast this afternoon with a high temperature near 40 degrees. And we'll see clearing skies tonight with lows dropping back to 25. I'm WGNS meteorologist Sandra Nicely. Right now it's 28.
To bag the deer of a lifetime, you have to be prepared. That's why you need to shop Murfreesboro Outdoors.
This is Randy at Murfreesboro Outdoors. We get camouflage clothes, shotguns, shells.
Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street.
He knows Rutherford County's past, and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's the Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Dr. Ralph Fullerton. And as you and I were talking about off the air, it just hit me that we had Lewis and Clark, and now we had Dr. Ralph Fullerton.
I know, please.
And what it took Lewis and Clark years to do, you do it in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is.
You guys have, and you were saying that you've actually, all of, pretty much all of the Latin American countries now have all been mapped out,
yes.
Which is amazing. You talk about how tough that country is down there geographic-wise with all the things. You were saying that you can actually take that mapping and you can tell what type of trees, vegetation, where are the best ways to build the roads. I mean, the information is so vital to those particular countries.
With this satellite imagery, and I've been out of it now almost 10 years, but I went up one time with Tennessee Highway Patrolman.
Mm-hmm.
because you can...
It wasn't Mike Dover, was it?
I believe it was, yes, come to think of it. And what we had indicated was that you could identify whether they were growing corn or wheat or marijuana. Well, if you noticed, a lot of the marijuana now is underground, in basements and things of that nature.
We had a few raids because of that.
Okay,
yes.
You see? And it's... I gave a talk to one of the farm organizations here a few years ago, and brought some images. And one of the old farmer gentlemen said, "You mean that you know what's in my backyard?" And I said, "Yes, sir, we do." He said, "I don't like that." And I said, "Well, I don't particularly like it either, but it's here. Yeah, it's here to stay, you know." And I was talking about the satellites that the military have. It was just unbelievable. I was at, NIMIC, National Military Intelligence Center, and we were watching on satellite when the Israeli troops went into Lebanon.
Wow.
And you could count the people in the trucks, you know, that kind of thing. And I said something about that technology, and because we didn't have that sophistication at MTSU, and the fellow I was working with, he says, "Oh, next year when you come back, we'll tell you whether or not the license plate's on with Phillips screws or straight screws."
It's so fascinating, and when you talk about working for the Pentagon, that you think about how much information that is gathered there that nobody even has a clue of what they know. And it's all coming from the airways that are mapping out every single inch of a place. Mm-hmm. And you wonder how we have so many advantages. Now, if we were a country like some of the third world countries, they would just love to take over the world and let everybody live the way they live. Can you imagine how powerful we could be, and of course irresponsible at the same time?
Right.
I mean, when you're putting countries, one country's give them the advantage over the whole world. I mean, we think that we could probably run the world real well, but you know, we're all better off. We're very fortunate to be here, but when you start talking about that amazing power that you had at the time, and technology keeps changing day after day after day, there are no secrets in the world.
No, really, there aren't. Again, I'm being a little facetious in this, but it's a mystery to me. In our country, we have Freedom of Information Act on the same books with the Right to Privacy Act. You know, really a contradiction. How deep do you go into this kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And as far as power and taking over and all, I think Colin Powell summed it up rather well when he was at a conference in France, and he said, "The only conquered territory the United States has ever taken was for cemeteries to bury our dead."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now there's always exceptions to that, obviously, and all.
Well, we all saw when the Gulf War first started, Norman Schwarzkopf was over there, and we're all fascinated by the technology that was being utilized, from the smart bombs to locating everything. And I think about it sometimes and say, where in the world are we going to go with this? But you know, it took us forever to find Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
But even at that, the technology is there where you can utilize it for anything that you want. I mean, it's amazing. And you were right there in the middle. You had to have top secret clearance where you were working. So you had to be, they had to have you totally in mind when you were doing all those things. It was almost like you were, I hate to use the three letters, but you were almost like a CIA sitting inside an office.
Well, you know, it's most interesting. Your clearances had to be updated periodically. Mm-hmm. And I had a gentleman working for me, a dear friend who's since passed away, Dr. Colin, and had been in the Navy during World War II. And a gentleman came by my office one day and showed his credentials, and he was from the National Security Agency, mm-hmm. checking on a student who had applied for a certain security clearance. And after going through the delicate questions and all, I said, by the way, before you leave, I said, my clearance is supposed to be in the process of updating. Do you know anything about that? And he mm-hmm. says, oh, I know. He said, we all have separate cases. Well, he left, and sometime late that afternoon, I saw Bill in the hall, and I said, how you doing? He said, oh, pretty well. He says, did you have a fella come by and ask about a student? And he said, yes. And he says, well, it's most interesting. He came by my office and was asking about you. And I even found out later that they were in my neighborhood.
That's amazing.
Talking, yeah. Yeah.
Did it ever make you feel uncomfortable?
Not really. To
be subjected to that type of scrutiny.
I kind of thought back about my father, who was a career military man, and ask him about some of the responsibilities he had during the war. And he said, I've made many mistakes, but he said, I always had a clear conscience. And so I knew they might find a lot of dumb things I did, but mm-hmm. not anything illegal or nasty or whatever. You know?
I'd love to have you as my teacher in class. You would be so fascinated. I couldn't wait to get there.
Well, thank you. God, that's a...
I can't believe you're retired. Are you completely retired now?
Yes. The only thing I do now is I teach Adventures in Learning. Are you familiar with that program?
I have heard about it. I'm not really that familiar with it.
I do that one, yeah. But these nice compliments, is this being recorded? I'd
yes.
like to take it home to the wife.
Actually, if she's not listening to it, you can pull it up on WGNS.com,
okay.
and it'll be podcast, right?
Okay.
All right. In fact, I may listen to it again, too, because I'm sitting here just trying to absorb everything that you're saying.
Well, you know, it's so wonderful to have students come up, and I had one say to me something that I will never forget. It says, after your class, I'll never look at the world the same again. And I said, you're learning.
I'll agree with him.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't. After all this information in just 1 hour, I know everybody is sitting there with their minds twirling right
well,
now.
Well, I hope so. It's always a compliment to be able to give something. I just during the Christmas season kind of laughed. I said, when I was young, I used to laugh at the statement, it's better to give than to receive.
Mm-hmm.
And now I realize how wise that really is.
It really is.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What a great show. Dr. Ralph Fullerton, it was my pleasure to have you, and I know the folks absolutely loved you this morning.
God bless. Thank you.
You too. See you in the morning at 9 o'clock.